It is right now time to bring in our friends from theberkshireedge.com. That's where you can find them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, bringing you news stories and current events and lots of things at theberkshireedge.com. It's time to bring in David and Marcy. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Good morning.
Well, it's nice to have you both along on this morning where we can once again look up to the sky and see the smoke from California and Oregon. And, you know, something very interesting happened this morning on our Facebook Live broadcast. A person who lives in Oregon contacted us and was talking with us about how they've had us now stay in their house four consecutive days with the windows sealed and everything. Because of the smoke.
Sanford is in Oregon.
No kidding.
In Portland, as a matter of fact.
This guy's a little north of Portland, but same thing. About 4 days inside.
So he didn't pick up his daughter, and then the day before, by the way, Seattle was. And last I heard, as of yesterday, schools were shut for at least a day in Seattle because the air quality was so bad.
So it's pretty interesting what's going on in our world, of course. But, you know, it's funny, before we start talking about your stories, there's so many people that say to me, climate change is not the cause of the fires. No. The fires mostly are caused by human error. But when they're caused and they start, that's where climate change takes
over.
That's
what it comes in. And really curious also is how it's not the whole Vancouver thing. Like, why isn't it going further? What's the deal that it's not going further?
Yeah, why?
Because you don't have the Santa Ana winds. It's totally different wind flow once you get up north of Portland. It's totally different wind flow. Totally different terrain. There's a whole bunch of different stuff that's once you get to Canada. And this year there aren't fires in Canada, but last year there were.
Right.
There were. Just a total different way whatever way the weather systems break and the airflows break tells you where the fires are going to be.
So it's the airflow.
Oh, absolutely. It's the airflow. Right. Absolutely.
And the gender reveal party, apparently.
You know, the start of these fires are a whole bunch of things, but the dry conditions, the airflow, how fire spread, that's all part of climate change and all why it happens. But anyway.
It would be lovely. I'm going to make a little comment, and I'm sorry. It'd be lovely if people were more aware of their surroundings so that perhaps if they,
But that's exactly
right. Well, in fact, we heard an NPR report the other day that it's very likely we're going to have some kinds of fires here in the east, too. I mean, it's not just something that's happening in the west.
It's sooner or later.
We're going through a drought.
Yeah, it's sooner or later. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's sooner or later.
And it'll be here, too.
We have the on and off drought syndromes where you get drought for like 7 months and then heavy rain for a month. That does no good. It runs off, and then you have drought, and then you have a human make a stupid mistake, and then all you need is some wind, and
you've got fire.
And things are out of control. So
and if you count the number of tornadoes we've had this year, you're just for people who think that Tornado Alley is elsewhere.
Yeah.
It is.
All right. Well,
Tornado Alley is in Northeast Ohio. That's where I grew up.
That's right. No, that's it's true. You don't realize. I swear you come out of there and you don't even think that there's a tornado here.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Connecticut, I hate to tell you, went all the way out to the shores of Lake Erie at one point.
Well, it did.
So talk about Tornado Alley. It's Connecticut.
That's right.
You see what I mean? It comes.
Yeah.
It goes all the way out to the Lake Erie, and the tornadoes just are following this old migration path.
You know, well, at least they know what they're doing.
You know, years ago,
they know what they're doing, right? And they have a sense of history, which is more than we can say for most Americans.
I'm all for that.
In those days, Connecticut didn't have as many N's. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a look at your first story that I want to get through because you're looking at the school districts in the Berkshires and not only Massachusetts but also Connecticut, and that is the reopening schools, the handling of schools, the way they're reopening, and of course everybody awaits for the other foot to drop when something might go wrong where somebody might report an infection. I mean, this is a story that is going to be on the minds of educators and parents and students every day.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's schools are tentatively opening with this kind of hybrid format where, they're going to be, it's people are going to be partially at home learning. It's just a it's just a nightmare, I would think, for administrators and for parents as well. I mean, how can they go to work, you know, if their kids are at home? It's really a terrible situation.
Yeah, and it's a situation that, like we said, no matter how hard the administrators or the staff or people have worked, the bus companies to put things together and to get school started as normal as possible, all it takes is one person with one infection to shut everything down for a day or two so schools can look. And you know, the laws of averages is that sooner or later something like that's going to happen. So parents and teachers and administrators, they all have to be patient, and it really is a day-by-day waiting game.
That's right. Yeah. Well, until Berkshire Hills, now we're talking about, which is the school district that is, you know, is in Great Barrington, Stockbridge, it has, and West Stockbridge, is they're going into a... Until October 5th, anyways, the school district will operate with a remote only, which I find I don't know how effective educationally these remote learning programs are, really.
Well, especially when you don't have convenient internet access every place.
Yeah,
I mean. That's the big foil in this whole thing. I guess it could work great if you had great internet service everywhere, but you don't where we live.
No, you don't. That's true. And you know, I wonder how many people still have dial-up, you know?
Well, there are. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And it's a challenge.
This is going to be a story that's going to be with us the whole school year, and it'll have rough points in it, and it's just one of those things that we're going to have to grind our way through, not only as residents and as parents and grandparents and friends of people that are teachers and kids in school, but as media type, because it really is one of those situations that as much as you prepare for, the worst, and then you can expect anything at that point.
There's nothing more fascinating than a 7-year-old like, "Can I go to school every day, Mom?" Which I've got.
Well, you know, the other thing is that, you know, school education is a progressive enterprise. And, you know, I wonder how well these kids will be prepared when they get to be high school.
Well, that's the whole thing. You're exactly right. The preparation and the way that they get and the way they learn from grade level to grade
behind.
Level is affected
terribly
in this progress.
I was very interested.
It's going to be difficult, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was actually quite interested to note. It just got me. I think I saw it on local news in Connecticut that they have opened some learning hubs. For people who,
uh-huh.
I thought, okay, so you can't open a school, but you can open a learning hub. That's good.
Well, you do what you can do is the whole thing. All right, I want to go on to your next story because it fits in with today's society, which I call the social media society. You start off with this with build something new and neighbors will object. Even if you are an existing business and you want to do something new, neighbors object. It is a minefield out there for people that have invested in their businesses and long term and then want to improve their businesses and feel stymied by people that have moved in knowing that that business was there.
Yep.
Oh, the airport.
Yeah. And the airport is a major thing.
That's just one. This is just sort of a little package of stories.
Yeah.
It's typical. in covering local stories, this happens over and over and over again. Where if you want to improve the airport, for example, then people who live near the airport are going to object.
Although it's not completely, the decision has been postponed. But
I don't think
nobody is rushing to approve it.
Well, that's the whole. This is going to. Everything's going to turn into a W.E.B. Du Bois moment where people are going to have to procrastinate, and then somebody sooner or later at the planning board or in the town is going to have to say, you know what? Let's just make the decision and go from there. Right. Sooner or later, the decision's going to have. You can kick that can down the street as long as you want, but sooner or later, that decision is going to have to be made. And that's with your whole story, not only with the airport, but with everything else. I mean, I feel sorry for people that are in these positions. Most of the people are volunteers, or if they get elected.
Well, we should tell our listeners exactly what we're talking about. I mean, in the case of the airport would like to build new hangars so that it can. It now parks planes on the lawn. I think it's got about 25 planes parked on the lawn.
Well, it's on grass.
On grass.
Next to the runway, right, along the runway.
And they would like to build some hangars so that these planes can be stored inside. The neighbors who did buy their houses nearby object because they think it's going to bring in a lot more traffic to the airport and they're going to have more buzzing over their heads. This airport has been there since, it was...
100 years.
Yeah, I mean, it started by a very interesting man who was really a leader in aviation. Who lived across the street from us, actually, until he died. So it is true that people... I mean, it's a difficult situation. I mean, it is true that people bought their houses knowing that the airport was there, but I think, it never occurred to them that airport could have more traffic than it had when they bought their houses.
It's one of those things but sooner or later, it's like the WED naming the school, a decision will be made one way or the other.
And some people will be unhappy and some people won't.
Yeah. So,
right.
And I have to say, I have a vested interest in this. I know Richard Solon very well. He's a good friend of mine. He's a decent man. He's a hard worker. He's been a pilot his whole life.
He's the owner of the airport.
He just retired from flying for a major airline, and he lives locally. So it's not like he's a non-local owner. He's at that airport every single day. So I will say, in all transparency, I know Richard and I'm good friends with him. So I just want to make that for people.
And it's lovely to have a small airport so close. I mean, I have a friend who has a plane who every once in a while flies in and there are a number of these small airports. There's one in Pittsfield also.
Yeah. All right, I want to move on to your next story because it's, as you say, on a more mellow note, a local organization is offering programs for teachers to deal with stress. And teachers should have to deal with stress on a normal basis, but never mind now with everything else that's piled on top of them with COVID-19.
Oh, right. The teachers are really stressed out and... So this was a kind of interesting way to deal with that, which was to propose she calls it of being free peace, wellness, and a little bit of calm to the teachers' lives.
Right. And she's trying to raise $1 million.
So yes, she is.
To provide this for teachers, now, I think it's going to be hard to find in this environment. But and she's doing this for which nonprofit is it? Flying Deer?
Yes.
Yes. There's an educational organization called the Flying Deer Nature Center, and our writer Sheila Clary, who wrote this letter to the editor, really is. She represents the Flying Deer Nature Center on a.
Well, she's on the board.
Yeah, right. But she also represents it in an organization called Community Learning in the Berkshires. This is the organization that she would like to carry out this new idea of, you know, of a place where teachers can get some support.
Right. Well, this is not only for teachers, but for community organizations.
Yeah. Workers.
Yeah.
Right.
And Flying Deer is a really a really interesting kind of center, and so this is
anyway. It does raise the issue. I mean, it's not exactly a solution. I mean,
that's right.
She is asking for people to send her money, and we don't know whether she's had any response since we posted this, but she does raise an issue which, you know, people are worried about the kids and what's happening in this, you know, in the way schools are opening. But the teachers and the staff are also incredibly stressed out, and we have to keep that in mind as well.
Absolutely.
Really, a tinderbox. You know, you wonder, is somebody going to crack?
You know, people are only concerned about the immediate effects of COVID-19, and they just don't realize that no one, not even the professionals, and they admit this, have any idea the long-term effect if somebody comes down with it. I mean, there's theories, but there's just a lot more to worry about than a school going to be open or closed. For all these people, there are family considerations and other things like that. You've got another story about education here, which is very interesting. By the way, of course, this is the Berkshire Edge on air, the BerkshireEdge.com, where they're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yes, we are. That's news. Right. We are. Geez, you're right. We are 24 hours a day.
I know. It basically is. You're expected to be there anyways because you provide a service. So that's what we're all in on. But your story is what happens if schools close through the pandemic and parents have to work? What happens if parents lose their job? I mean, there's so many other considerations to look at here when you talk about education, parents, single-parent households, parents that both have jobs. I mean, this is a wide-ranging topic.
Oh, it is. It looks like I actually merged two stories. David, would you help?
No. Well, Sheila Clary is a teacher herself who wrote this story, and she has a plan for having the local community centers and nonprofit centers join together to provide educational spaces and childcare during this pandemic. She's quite not only a teacher, she's a great writer.
Yeah, she writes often about.
Yeah. So we'll see whether anyone takes her up on this, but this is just one way in which people are trying to think of how to manage and keep our culture together during this pandemic.
But the other story that, you know, that I sort of merged the two, but there is an organization called the Center for Peace Through Culture, and they are already offering free programs throughout Berkshire County for educators, teachers, school and community organizations that are trying to promote resiliency, responsibility, and compassion. And so, for teachers, this nonprofit is offering relaxation and focusing techniques so that teachers, you know, for personal use, but these techniques can also be used in the classroom. So that's different from Sheila Clary's proposal. So there is a lot happening. Yeah.
I want to get to your last story because I read this in The Edge, and I also credited you and talked about it on the air earlier because the Guthrie Center at Housatonic is now looking for a way to raise funds. I mean, and this might not seem like to a lot of people, this might, you know, the Alice's Restaurant, this, but the Guthrie Center is far more than that. And and you really hope that through this pandemic, they can survive, they can get those funds to keep on doing what they're doing.
Oh, I know. You know, I mean, it's sort of, it's not one of the big organizations that people know about, but it is really, you know, we think an organization that captures the spirit of the, and the personality of the Berkshires, that here is Arlo Guthrie, who, who ended up buying this church, which was, you know, which was really the genesis of his song, Alice's Restaurant, because he spent a Thanksgiving with Alice Brock and her husband, who were living in the church, and that's when, you know, he went to dump the trash on Thanksgiving Day, and he ran into Officer Obie, and thus began
He got arrested.
The 22-minute or whatever it is, saga of Alice's Restaurant. But he bought this church in, I think, 1971, and he, as he has said, he didn't declare what it was going to be because he wanted it to be an organization that was responsive to the community. And so they have, over the years, evolved a number of really interesting programs, and they are kind of a shelter for, for people who are not finding, help elsewhere. So they have community lunches that are subsidized. They have free school free tutoring for students. They have a free instrument and music library and lending program. They have and the engine, which has financially driven the whole enterprise, was their music series, the Troubadour series, every summer, and which had to be, had to be discontinued this summer.
Yeah. Well,
so they have no money to continue all these wonderful things that they have been doing, and it's not only the programs. I mean, it's sort of the personality of the Berkshires. I mean, here's Arlo Guthrie, a local guy who has started this with local people. It's, they're not big names attached to this except for Arlo's. But it is a very special institution, which is why we felt that we really wanted to help them.
All right. Well,
so the director, theater and television director Matt Penn has produced an 8-minute film about the origins of Alice's Restaurant. The origins of the Guthrie Center, rather. And Matt comes by this justifiably because his father, the film director Arthur Penn, produced and directed the movie Alice's Restaurant, 20 years ago. And so Matt has been very involved with the Guthrie Center.
And we have to wrap this.
He produced an 8-minute film.
Yeah, we have to wrap this up. People could see the film, but they can also sign on and make a donation.
If you give money, if you give $25, you can see a new film, Arlo and Friend, playing some music that you won't have heard before.
I just wanted to make sure we got that in there. Well, guys, it's
always
it's a
busy
time. Always a pleasure. And the BerkshireEdge.com.
Hey, it's great to hear from you guys. From you too.
And we'll speak to you guys next week.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
The BerkshireEdge.com on the internet here. And